Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And we will continue...
Onward and upward.
Yeah, but right. Particularly on this growth policy document that you want to bring
right.
up.
So, okay. You know, as,
give us some little background on this or why this
okay,
is
so there's
current
a,
to you.
You know, I guess it's sort of been a kind of a recurring theme over the last few weeks with us is this Envision Cambridge process is wrapping up.
Right.
Let's not quite say wrapping up. It's not
no,
quite there.
No, it's not. But there's a lot of emphasis on housing.
Right.
And
but they're promising a kind of a report by December, which is not that far away.
A draft report.
A
not
draft
a final report.
Yeah. And also now some of the recommendations from working groups have been farmed out to various city council committees.
Oh, has that happened?
Several of them have already been scheduled.
All right. Okay.
I think one maybe with urban form.
Oh, yeah,
mistaken,
you're right. They have been.
Neighbors
I have them all
planning.
Written down. Yeah.
And the early
through
ones
through November
the,
and December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the environment related ones
yes.
are gone to Environment and Health Committee.
Okay.
So, so we're kind of in the middle of it now, right? There's also been some controversies. We won't go into great length about
no.
it this week, you know, with this overlay proposal and a mm-hmm. super inclusionary proposal, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
All right. Anyway, there was a, at your suggestion, I watched a planning board meeting
from September 25th.
September,
yeah.
Which had to do with that overlay district.
Right. There was another presentation by community development to the planning board.
And in it, it was Hugh mm-hmm. Russell had mentioned, he started quoting particular things that were part of the city's Cambridge's growth policy. Now, again, the brief background is that in around 1992, there was a series of meetings. I only got to maybe one or two of them myself. I guess I wasn't really invited, but anybody could have gone. But it was in the height of all the talk about parking freezes and other things.
Oh, rent control was still in
rent
effect,
control
right?
was still in place, which is the reason why the whole thing had to be a bit updated some years
right.
later. So,
right. So
back in 1993, they passed what stood as a draft version of what they called toward a sustainable future Cambridge's growth policy document, right? It was always curious to me that it always said draft, and years passed, it always said draft. But then eventually they said, no, it's not really a draft, this is the policies. But for the longest time, when the planning board would issue a special permit, they would quote specific policies from the growth policy document, according to policy number 34, such and such, to justify why they were acting in the way they were. So they were being guided very substantially.
And you said there's 70 policies?
About 70.
Wow.
So, what drove the decision to have this growth policy document mm-hmm. in the first place is probably important. There was a lot of political movement toward limiting growth, specifically commercial development at the time, politically. There was also the concern that we needed to grow tax base and that there were some issues over the parking freeze that might have completely chopped off the capacity to do that at all. So that needed to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there were some underlying reasons why we had to develop this whole big policy document, but we did. And in fact, if you look at the specifics, we'll switch that in a second here, you'll actually see the core basis for a lot of policies that the city's been actually engaging in for the last mm-hmm. 20, 25 years. So that's where you see a lot of focus on alternate transportation modes, promotion of bicycling, promotion of pedestrian environment, things that, maybe in a generation earlier we would have said, we need to make the roads wider to get those cars through.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very much a departure from that, all right? But there were other things about preservation of urban form, scale, and density,
mm-hmm.
and whatever happens in the future, you shouldn't just sort of run roughshod over the past. So a lot of these things were distilled into these policies. Now, I'm just going to switch over to some of these things here, right now here. I mean, it's kind of impossible to sort of read all of these here.
And by the way, I mean, if you go to Robert's website, this is just the text, but you can actually see he has the full thing in color and stuff,
right.
So you can see it.
Yeah, there's a report. There's a link to the on the CDD website that actually shows the full report.
But you also have
back
it.
Here, but
yeah.
that basically has a lot of images to go along with this, a lot of narrative to go along with it.
Right.
But then there's just the policies themselves, which are basically
listed
in the
yeah.
margins.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I just wanted to put them into a single place because I don't remember that I had ever done that before.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, so that was back around 1993 that came out. I think the fact that it was called toward a sustainable future. Was sort of in recognition of there was a big talk at the time about sustainability.
Yeah, well, that's when, you know, recycling division got.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of things were happening.
Yeah, so you know, things were in their
Clinton
formative
came
stages.
In to, was president.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
Know?
You know, so that's those were the times. Now, now documents, planning documents, master plans are not carved in stone.
Mm-hmm.
Things change, times change, priorities change. One big, as you point out,
the
biggest change was in 1994,
down,
question
right.
9, out with rent control. By 95 mm-hmm. through 97, it was being fully implemented.
Yeah.
So there was one big switch, which was that they wanted to basically promote housing growth, and to a degree, because the Affordable Housing Trust had been established, to also ensure that some adequate supply of subsidized housing was also being promoted as part of the city's policies.
So why did it take 14 years, though, to update it?
I think basically, there, you know, first off, it was a draft.
Oh,
so,
okay. So maybe there were little changes being made.
But what happened
or?
Is, I think, you know, so there were a lot of city council activity in the late 90s that were acknowledging the need to sort of do some growth in housing.
Oh, yeah.
And the idea was, and it's still been largely implemented, in that there were former industrial areas, North Point, University Park area,
Kendall,
Alewife, Quadrangle,
right.
Triangle, you know, where in fact, if there was going to be growth, they said, well, let's make it as of right that you can build housing in places where previously you couldn't put housing.
Oh, right. With big emphasis on that. In that whole housing section.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you look at it, the original plans for University Park were actually modified, and I think they popped another 600 units of housing or something like that in there. I could be wrong on the numbers. North Point was basically the old railroad yards developing a lot of housing going up in there.
Right.
Out in the quadrangle.
Right.
No, excuse me,
the triangle.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
By Alewife, a lot of housing going up. In fact,
and there's photos of this if you go to the document.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
So by the time you're getting around the early 2000s, there was a promotion of housing, and you know, they passed the Concord Alewife plan, and that had a lot of housing you know, anticipated as part of that plan. And then it happened a lot faster
than they thought.
Than
that's
they
why
thought.
All those big
and that's where
units.
People said, we need a master plan. And
I
that's,
see that
and
makes
that's
sense
kind
now.
Of where
okay.
Envision came from. You know, it was the rapid growth of housing and what some
but
people,
that was because of the updated version. That's happened. A lot of what you just said
you
was
know,
because
I,
of the updated version. I looked at that.
Well, actually,
version.
It's the Concord Alewife rezoning that basically said, let's encourage some housing out there.
Right. Okay.
The growth policy document updates were really just more of an acknowledgement of the fact of what was. So it wasn't like those were zoning changes.
No,
right?
But it did.
It's just to say these are our current set of beliefs.
Right, but it showed a lot of the developments that were happening then.
Yeah, so if you look at the current version, you actually see a lot of updated images that sort of show you know,
what
the city's thinking was. Now, you know, based on what Hugh Russell had said at this planning board meeting, I thought to myself
about the new proposal.
Yeah, so all right, so now Envision Cambridge process is wrapping up its third year. Really four if you count in the continuing, the Cambridge conversations lead up to it before they chose the UTL facilitators for this. So they came up with this 175 recommendations, some of which have to do with zoning, some of which are not. And, you know, Hugh had said, well, these proposals, specifically that overlay proposal or the super inclusionary, does this go against some of the growth policies that we established and we've been using successfully for a quarter century now?
Yeah.
Now, maybe they should change things. Maybe it's appropriate, right? But it occurred to me, actually, it was the last night of this morning, I said, you know, I'm on the Envision Cambridge Advisory Committee.
And it was never brought up.
I said, wow. Nobody ever said, hey, everybody, here's your homework assignment. Why don't you go review those 70 policies and make a list of which ones should be changed and which ones should be preserved? Because Hugh's point, I think, was that one of those proposals having to do with subsidized housing was flatly contradicting multiple policies that are established in the growth policy document. Mm-hmm. So the question is, so are we saying that somehow they're no longer valid or should no longer be mm-hmm. valid? In other words, things yeah. like preserving scale and yeah. You know, scale and density of right. existing sort of stable residential neighborhoods.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Because it certainly appears that now there's this kind of new desire amongst some quarters
right. Right.
to basically upset the apple cart and mm-hmm. say, you know, for whatever reason, I won't judge, but, you know, and I thought, well, that's an interesting thing to think about. So I really think that anybody who's got any interest in Envision Cambridge should go buy themselves a coffee and sit down, or a beer, and go through the policies that have been in place for 25 years and say, yeah. good, bad, modify, change, throw mm-hmm. out. What do you think?
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm kind of getting of the opinion that, in fact, there was actually some pretty good wisdom
yeah.
shown 25 years ago, maybe even yeah. more so than we're getting currently out of this
exercise.
It's
146 pages, so it is quite a
document. The whole thing
is
146 yes. pages, but yep. I, as I say, if you just yep. want to read the policies, you can just read the 70
policies.
True,
but it is nice to look at the places they refer to.
I absolutely
think so. I like the color, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah, no, so do I. So so anyway, that
yeah.
I think that's something people should do.
Yeah.
I really do.
A little late in the game, but hey,
yeah,
why not?
Yeah.
So wait, so you went to a housing meeting last night of Envision?
Yeah, okay, so we could say a thing or two about that. Okay, so you know, there's been a certain amount of controversy stirred up over a couple of these, 100% affordable housing overlay
right.
and this super inclusionary. Okay, well, let's not get into the specifics of
right.
all of those, but it was certainly the housing working group of Envision Cambridge that was charged with, not exclusively, this was originally, let's be clear, that the idea about this overlay came out of the city council probably 4 years ago.
Right, Denise Simmons.
And then somehow it got sort
right.
of put into the lap of Envision
yes.
process. And then the group who was forwarding it was this housing working group, which is about 99%, can't be 99%, but 95% sort of people in this sort of the affordable housing production business.
Okay.
So it was going to shock nobody what their recommendations were going mm-hmm. to be. But I actually found myself raising real questions. So I sort of, now I guess I'm sort of the bad boy of the committee.
Yeah.
Because I'm on that committee.
Yeah.
So we thought I thought was going to be the last meeting. And then they said, okay, 2 weeks later, we're going to have another meeting. So I went to that last night. And it was interesting, and some of it was constructive
and
helpful.
Was it well attended, at least?
It was much more well attended than all yeah. the other meetings that I think
well,
I can
they
even
heard
remember.
That, you probably have said that they
yeah.
were not showing up. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was helpful, right? And there was some, you know, good city staff. Cliff Cook was there, who was, you know, he does a lot of the data.
There's so, a lot of public there this time. Or no?
Not too much public, no. You know, so I spoke my piece about some of the recommendations that they have as targets and why mm-hmm. I disagree with some of them, strongly disagree with some of them. You know, my biggest disagreement is that there seems to be almost an ideology at work here that says that the only way in which affordability will ever be achieved in Cambridge is by basically regulating the housing stock and basically, you know, having subsidized housing. And I said, I think there's absolutely a place for it. There'll always be a place for public mm-hmm. housing and whatever. But the notion that somehow you're going to provide the attractive option for middle-income earners by saying, here, why don't you apply to the city and live in public housing?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's just, anybody who believes that
right.
doesn't have a clue about middle-income people.
Yeah, right.
Middle-income people have a little bit of money, maybe
right.
they're not rich,
right?
But they have choices and they want choices.
Right.
So if you give them a choice between buying in, maybe with one thing if it's a short-term thing, but if you're saying, look, here, we want you to basically buy into some subsidized housing thing in Cambridge where you don't build up any equity at all, or you could move to Medford or Watertown and get yourself a better piece of property at cheaper cost
that you can then
so what happens
appreciate in
right so that's what happens so middle income people are going to do that that's what they've always done. Once upon a time they found another place in Cambridge. In fact, many of those middle income people
bought multifamily,
you know, like let's just say they were born like Louis DePasquale. right? City manager. He born in East Cambridge. Not uncommon that somebody was born and raised in East Cambridge. They start to become a little more successful. Say, where do I want to go? I still want to live in Cambridge. So they moved out to North Cambridge. You know, they found a place up in Strawberry Hill or up in Cambridge Highlands.
But that was
or,
when you could do that.
That's when you can do that. So I'm, you know, and all, or what you did, if you were a working class person,
you bought a two family or a three family.
And you worked it.
And then
it,
you have an income.
And then you had some income to help you cover your costs.
But that's hard to do now.
It's harder. So nobody's saying it is.
Houses,
right. So nobody's saying that it's it's easy to do that that way. But the truth is, so as a result, middle income people saying, well, I can't afford to do it. So I have to go to Watertown or I have to move to Belmont or whatever. Well, they get the big shock of their life when they get Belmont tax bill and they realize, my God, we had it so good in Cambridge, right?
Well, unless you're not owner-occupied.
So anyway, I raised some issues because my personal opinion is that most of their recommendations are doing nothing. I mean, really, nothing for middle-income earners.
I agree.
Yeah. Though I won't read it here, I actually read a quote. I was cleaning up my house, old city council materials, and I found a communication from the one and only Patrick Barrett.
Yeah.
Had to do with during the inclusionary zoning when they were doing those revisions. Well, he just made absolutely abundantly clear. He says that market rate housing is where middle income people are going to find their affordability, even if it's tough to do in Cambridge. That's because that's what they want. They want to, you know, build up some equity in their property. So that's still what they're, so somehow you have to find a way of having non-regulated housing and still provide opportunities. Whether they're all in Cambridge, they might be nearby, whatever, for middle-income people.
But how could the city actually do that?
Well, first of all, I don't
having
think,
a well income, another income limits and stuff.
Well, one of the one of my biggest disappointments in Envision was that early on, some of us were absolutely adamant that we have to sort of work more regionally. We even suggested, I know I certainly suggested, that we should actually have a joint meeting with Somerville's Summer Vision or they're doing some rezoning in Somerville, City of Boston. We have like a joint of these three core communities or more where we sort of say, well, what's happening? Now, completely separate from Envision, bless their hearts, the mayors, they had a thing where they actually agreed to up housing production regionally. Mm-hmm. But I said early on, and I still believe this firmly, the best way you provide market affordability in Cambridge is by giving people options all around. So, you know, and I've specifically said, if they build as they will, you know, thousands of units of housing in Union Square, Somerville, or, you know, over where the new Green Line extension will go, whatever, then there are people who are looking and somebody says, I want $5,000 for this, you know, up rent here in Cambridge. And they go, well, why should I do that when I can go over there, be right on the Green Line in Union Square, and do something? I don't know if it'll be cheaper. But the thing is that you also, and this is one of the other things, and I've said this multiple times at this meeting last night, you know, everybody in this committee, not to toot my own horn, but I think I'm the only one who's thinking in 10-year and 20-year scales, envisioning the future, the long future.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, if you don't build the housing units today, then there won't be those units 20 years from now, which are no longer as expensive as they were when they were first built. You got to get them in the ground. So the thing is don't get too distracted by how expensive things are when something first comes on the market. You need to build up the market.
Right. Well, I guess it's, are you talking about condos? Or are you talking about rentals?
Both.
I
mean, both,
see, that's
really.
Really the issue.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that for the, you know, when I moved into my house in Cambridge, that was a house that was built in 1912.
Mm.
I don't know whether it was considered affordable when somebody first moved
again,
in 1912.
But again, comparing when you bought your house,
But the thing is that when you build something brand new,
sure,
that's probably not the standard you should use for affordability.
True.
But the thing is, as buildings age, as long, and yes, there's maintenance costs, whatever, but the thing is that there are a lot of buildings who've been around for a while, and that's actually where a lot of the affordability in the market housing existed for years and years and years, certainly under rent control, and not just because of rent control.
Yeah.
It's just that,
I mean, a lot of apartments and rentals were turned into condos with the condo law. So,
you know, that's another, I think that was a huge policy.
Mass Ave between Harvard and Porter Square, all those.
To me, one of the biggest policy mistakes Cambridge made in the last 20 years was that if they had put at least some limitation on condo conversions so that there were at least multi-family opportunities, and if you could have petitioned the state to allow for the residential exemption to work very effectively so that, in fact, there was an incentive for the small property owners to be owning those as opposed to the investors to come to own them all.
Right, and then they get a residential
exemption. Then you could have retained a middle class in this city. They just basically kicked the middle class right out of the city by not doing things like that.
Well, they didn't, let's face it, they did not tweak the rent control laws, and that's why it went to a statewide referendum. They could have done
really
something
then,
and you know, they didn't because they took it for granted. We have our constituency; we're always going to get voted in. And guess what? It went to a statewide referendum, and other people decided it.
Yep.
So
that's right. That's right.
But something next time.
Right, but I'm not. You know? I am simply not satisfied with this sort of the current mindset that says that
we need more and more and more.
That
and
it
more
has
more.
To be.
Yeah.
So from now on, the only way any affordability is to be achieved is by basically applying to a city agency to what's effectively, scattered site public housing.
Right.
You know, to me, that doesn't address, it certainly doesn't do a thing for middle-income earners.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's some buying. I mean, you have the issue about limited equity, but you know what? If you still can get something nice and stay in Cambridge, you are allowed a little bit of increase, I think, if you sell it.
A little bit,
keeping it for the next person.
But, you know, there's another thing, too, that I did, largely because I was a little, believe it or not, I was actually a I haven't got my real estate tax bill yet, though I think they were mailed out last Friday. So.
I know someone that got, and they're really angry. It's like $800.
Yeah. So so anyway, I heard that they were mailed out, and I said, I wonder if mine will come on Saturday. Well, it didn't. Did it come on Monday? Mm-hmm. No. Maybe it'll be in the mail when I come home tonight, right? But I said, okay, well, let me just see, because I'm a math geek, right? I'll just sort of see if I can sort of figure out what my tax bill is going to be from the assessed value, whatever.
And
I went through that, and I said, well, you know, as long as I did that, let me do it and look at the entire last 30 years and just see how my assessments have changed, how the residential exemptions have changed. It's like a little study.
Yeah, because you're owner-occupied, so you're going to have the residential exemption,
But the interesting thing is that for many years, even when the assessments went up, there were years they went down.
Because it's a residential exemption for you.
No. That's not the assessment. You take the assessed value and you subtract out the residential exemption.
Okay.
I'm talking about the assessed values actually.
That went down.
It went up some. Then it jumped some, and then it went down some, or whatever.
It didn't consistently go up.
But it's only over. No, it did not.
That's surprising.
And the thing is that some of it has to do with two-family, three-family houses being assessed somewhat differently than single-family homes, whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing is what then happened is really over like the last decade or less, is that it just started just jumping up, right? Year after year, just dramatic increases. And I think most people who think about this understand a lot of this has to do with investors parking their money in what is seen as a stable, in a rapidly changing world, a stable place to store your money.
It never goes down, really. Yeah.
And this actually related to something I brought up at this housing committee. Nobody else talked about vacancy rate. I brought up vacancy rate.
Right, yeah.
Because, you know, affordability of housing is always discussed in conjunction with vacancy rate. This housing working group never uttered the phrase.
Well, do we have a vacancy rate?
It's pretty low. It's sort of around 3% according to Cliff Cook right now. But to get an actual dynamic market, it's got to be up at like 5 or so. But I said, but now let's think about it. Is the vacancy rate really 3% in Cambridge, or is it higher? I say that it's higher because there are a lot of properties that are newly built where they were holding their units back from the market because they wanted to fix the prices to some degree. And also, there are investors who have properties where, in fact, the income month to month is not really the issue. It's the storage of the money in just by having the
properties. So you think there's some empty new units out there?
Or
do you know that for a fact?
I can look around.
You look in the windows?
In the windows.
Oh, come on. They're high rises.
If the lights are never on. Then there's nobody living
there. They're working
there.
At Google all day and night.
So Cliff Cook says, well, I don't know. We don't really. It's a very hard question. We do believe it's higher, but it's kind of hard to get at. And I said, well, here's an idea. right? Well, there's two, I gave him two ideas.
Yeah, okay.
Why don't they think of this stuff? One is, ask Eversource to ship over the electric bills.
Oh.
And if the electric bills are really low, nobody's living there.
They're not going to do that.
Yeah. The other thing is, I actually have the street listings of the city of Cambridge going back 20 years.
Huh.
Right? And I've got them on a computer. Now, I don't know that I have necessarily the database skills to extract it, but you could actually see, ask questions like continuous occupancy. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a related question about tenure of occupancy in the city.
Okay.
Well, you could actually figure that out from the street listings if you wanted to.
That's a lot of work.
No, actually, it's let the computers do the work. It's all about how you write the question.
It's how you write the program.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it is knowable. It is absolutely knowable.
All things are knowable.
But the thing is that I think, and I know in my neighborhood, there are more than a few apartment units that are just sitting there because that, you know, they could rent it and maybe they eventually will. But the thing is that
they've parked their money and they don't really need to have their rental.
Yeah. So we can talk about, there's a goal from this housing group to produce another 12,500 units of housing.
Yeah.
Okay. And I always ask, and Dennis Carlone asks, well, what's your target population? What do you want the population of Cambridge to be?
Exactly.
How many schools do you want? Yeah. Tell me about this, right?
Well, is it going to be people's kids anyway?
Right. Yeah. So the thing is, if you're producing housing units, but the thing is you're not occupying the housing units, then you're not really addressing things.
Well,
so anyway, I just think there's a lot to be desired in what's coming out of this.
Yes.
You know?
Okay. Well, you certainly threw a lot out there that they need to look
at. Yeah. Anyway, I was going to talk a little bit more about some Central Square, but hey.
Maybe next week.
Maybe next week.
Be here next week, but hopefully.
We may or may not be here next week. We'll see.
And if Robert's here, that means someone else is sitting in my place.
Yeah. But we did have our first formula business case for Central Square. It's Amazon.
Versus a big A.
Exactly. And now that's actually going to the planning board tonight.
Oh.
Right. So
I
might go there just to
that'd be curious.
Basically clarify something. We'll have to see about that.
Maybe Jeff will be there. He was in town. Jeff Bezos was in town
over
the weekend. Maybe he'll be at the planning board.
So are we going to become Amazon headquarters number two?
Who knows? I hope
not. My God. We're a world champion city.
I don't want to.
See you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.